I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly, and today on The Detail, I'm at Whakapapa Ski Field on Mount Ruapehu, and it is a spectacular day. No cloud, a dusting of snow up on the highest peaks, and no wind. And there's a steady trickle of tourists coming up here, buying their tickets to go on the gondola. Some are just out for a walk. Actually, there's a cyclist heading off down the mountain. But what's not spectacular about this mountain is the uncertain future of the ski field here. And of course, the uncertain future of the chateau, the historic hotel that's been shut for over a year now at the foot of the mountain.
Disappointment, frustration, a lack possibly of consultation. It's an impending feeling of doom in some quarters, but in others there is hope.
Waikato Times senior journalist Matthew Martin has been covering the mountain and its troubles since August 2022, when 100 workers at Tūroa Ski Field lost their jobs. Later, he'll tell us more about the impact on the region. And Newsroom's business reporter Andrew Bevan has written more than 30 stories on the twists and turns of the ski fields, the collapse of the operator Ruapehu Alpine Lifts, the creditors owed $70 million, the on-again, off-again buyers, and the millions of taxpayer dollars to bail it out.
Yeah, it's very complicated. I mean, you've got multiple government departments, multiple ministers, you've got the receivers, you've got the liquidators, you've got the people who paid to build the Skywalker gondola on Whakapapa, you've got the life pass holders. And then obviously Mount Ruapehu is so important to so many different iwi and hapu groups who do need to have a say. I mean, you know, it's thought of as an ancestor, not a mountain. It's very important.
What's the latest on the ski fields?
So the Department of Conservation is currently going through a process to approve a buyer for Te Rauā to operate in the Tongariro National Park. So if that goes through, Te Rauā will have an owner, but there's no real answer for Whakapapa.
Who's running it at the moment?
So it's being run by receivers appointed by MB and its regional development arm, Kānoa. So it was previously being run by PwC, who were liquidators basically appointed by the company, but the government bought some debt from ANZ for a dollar, $13 million of debt for a dollar, and appointed its own people to run the thing as it wants.
Let's recap on how it's come to this and why it's so complicated. So back in, what was it, late 2022, Ruapehu Alpine Lifts, which was operating both Whakapapa and Tūroa ski fields, went into voluntary administration.
Yeah, so basically they had COVID and then, you know, they're down on their luck. It's been hard to get those numbers through, and then they just have a bit of a shocker of a season. They don't have the money to keep things going. And they call in voluntary administrators who sort of come in and they try find a path forward for the company.
Those voluntary administrators, we sort of came to know them quite well, especially John Fisk from PwC.
Yeah, they came in, and I guess so many people were just so interested that these administrators, liquidators, who you sort of think as backroom operators really are, probably getting bothered by the media every day. I felt a little bit bad, actually.
So what was their job?
So John Fisk and Richard Nacy come in, and they just start running the business. Basically, you know, the business still has its directors and, you know, the management stays the same. But John and Richard are basically in charge. They're saying, all right, we're going to do this season. We'll allocate this much money to that. And basically, we're going to try sell the thing.
Find buyers for it. Were they successful?
There were some favoured buyers last year.
The future of skiing on Mount Ruapehu may have been saved. NewsHub can reveal two separate bids are now likely to be recommended to Cabinet.
We can reveal that MB has given the nod to Pure Tūroa. Whakapapa will likely be taken over by a private equity firm with links to South Island businessman Tom Elworthy.
And so there was a vote of creditors to approve those buyers, and that failed. And it failed in quite an interesting way that was, when you look back, inevitable. Because there are 14,000 people who bought life passes to the ski field, and they all got to vote on the future. So the numbers were obviously just overwhelmingly swayed to them. But the government had the money. And so there was this sort of stalemate situation where the government's thing didn't pass. And then the life pass holder's motion didn't pass either because the government vetoed that. And maybe that makes it sound a little bit complicated, but nothing was ever going to happen.
What was the next step? It went into liquidation.
Ruapehu Alpine Lifts will file for liquidation today after two options to take over management failed to gain enough support among creditors at a crucial meeting yesterday. In the coming days are pivotal as the liquidator tries to sell the assets of Whakapapa and Turoa ski areas to two separate bidders.
Yeah, it went into liquidation, which is, it means the company is basically insolvent, can't pay its bills. The voluntary administrators say, okay, we're in liquidation. We're now in a position where we can sort of break it up, strip it, and they just have more control. Nothing changed. Basically, yeah. Everything is the same under liquidation as voluntary administration. It might have a different name, but it seemed like the process and the path forward was essentially the same.
So who are these creditors who are owed $70 million?
Yeah, so you've got MB, the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment's regional development arm, Kānoa. So that's owed about $42 million. So that's the original debt, the debt it bought from ANZ, and sort of various bridging loans that I'm sure we're all pretty aware of.
Yeah.
The gondola bondholders are owed about $14 million. Then you've got the life pass holders. You've got people who work there, probably, you know, their holiday pay. And trade creditors as well, I assume. So that's people who have to come in and maintain the mountain.
The government is a main creditor. Just last month, the government put in more money and Shane Jones, the regional development minister, said, that's it.
This is the last chance saloon allocation. I've been advised by the advisors that there is a live deal pertaining to Tūroa. On the other side, Whakapapa, that's a bit more complicated.
Where are we at in terms of how much the government has poured into it?
I think we're at about $20 million now.
Right.
You really do lose track.
That's not counting Provincial Growth Fund.
Yeah, the Provincial Growth Fund invested in the gondola project. That $20 million figure is post-administrators.
Yeah.
Which is eye-watering.
With the life pass holders, they need to put in a bit more cash to continue to be life pass holders.
I think so. I think the expensive free ride on the life pass is about over. It's basically up to the buyers as far as, you know, how they want to approach it. And those life passes will be honoured with a little bit of a cash injection or, you know, buying another one at a discount.
On both sides of the mountains? Or is that not clear yet?
That's not clear
at
all. We don't know anything about what's happening with Whakapapa.
Exactly.
On Tūroa, they will be if they put in a little bit more cash, is my understanding.
We're now coming into winter 2024. Because we keep hearing stories about it, it just feels very uncertain.
Absolutely. We know who's going to buy Tūroa, but even that, there's a layer of uncertainty, right?
You're talking about the concession for pure Tūroa.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why the concession is such a complicated thing, that it's not just a matter of it being transferred from the previous owners to these owners. What does it take to get this concession?
So you have to put in a pretty lengthy submission to DOC, detailing your plans and how you're going to manage things on the mountain. I mean, you know, we had the diesel leak up there that poisoned Rātihi's water supply.
Ruapehu Iwi says a diesel leak into a Tongariro National Park stream that feeds into the Rātihi town water supply is devastating. The Makotoku stream's been contaminated by up to 15,000 litres of diesel from a tank at the base of the Tūroa ski field.
So these things are really, really important. This is a dual-listed UNESCO site. It's our first national park. And we just need to be really careful about what happens there and who does it. And I don't think anyone sort of disagrees with that.
You know, you tend to feel a little bit for DOC. Because they're kind of the meat and a bit of a sandwich here. They're the sort of department that's handling these concessions, but they have, you know, by law, they have to engage with iwi and those other stakeholders. The complication around it is because it's in a national park, you have very different rules about how you can run a business there. You're basically, a concession is a long-term lease or a license to do business. you know, they're sort of dockers stuck in a rock and a hard place. They are negotiating to look after a national park, to make sure that there's no adverse effects upon that park. But they also have to think with a business hat on and who's going to be doing the bet, who's going to run the operation on the mountain, you know, basically who they can trust to look after the natural beauty of that area.
Now, before I head down the mountain to the chateau, let's recap. Puaturoa looks to be the next owner of Turoa Ski Field, if it gets the dock concession. No new buyer has been found for Whakapapa. It's still being run by the liquidators. Creditors are still $70 million out of pocket. But what about iwi?
Under the Tongariro National Park plan, iwi need to be thoroughly consulted, not tokenistically consulted. And they are pretty staunchly saying that hasn't happened. And even in some documentation, you know, there's members of the community and just saying, I support this because iwi have been rigorously consulted. And then the iwi are saying, well, no, we haven't. You can't just sort of have a cup of coffee with us a couple of times and say that's done. So if the ski field process does go any further, particularly on the current dock concession, there is a lot of talk of judicial review. Whether that comes to anything, I'm not sure what that would
mean. Judicial review of?
Getting a judge to review dock's decision.
Okay,
basically,
the concession process.
And say, does this fit within the Tongariro National Park plan? Did dock consider the right things here? And why? Whether that happens, whether anything comes of it, hard to say. That's sort of a very expensive decision for a group to make.
But how well treated have iwi been in this whole complicated process?
They've been sort of saying to anyone who listened that they're not listening to us. And, you know, there's the previous Minister for Regional Development apologised to Tufaletoa, sent them a letter, and sort of said PwC haven't talked to you and we apologise for that. PwC said, well, it's not our job to talk. We did our bit. It's actually the Crown's job to run that relationship. So it's been a mess, and it's I think there are members of that community who are quite devastated about the whole thing.
In itself, the place of iwi is complicated because there are so many different hapu, depending on which side of the mountain you're on.
Absolutely, and far more fractionalised than that even. And even the tributaries that come off the mountain. So, you know, the Whanganui River, the mountain is incredibly important to groups the whole way down. And there are active treaty settlements over the mountain. So you've really got to think, the government and Crown Māori relations groups really will be watching this closely.
Do the different Māori groups have different interests, i.e. are they not united on what they want for the mountain?
By and large, I think they would share a similar vision, which is let's do this carefully and make sure we are listened to and taken seriously. And you've got to think these groups probably weren't in that position in the 50s, 60s, 70s. There are some groups who are more sort of, you know, they're not opposed to Puaturoa buying the operations.
Yeah.
But again, they still want to see it done carefully. They want to be reported back to on issues such as, you know, contamination and air quality.
But even within that, with Puaturoa taking over Turoa itself, there is an issue. There's a challenge to the name.
Yeah. The Turoa name comes from a famous leader of the area, whose ancestors still around today, Hayden Turoa. He's been very active and vocal in this whole process. And perhaps it wasn't such a big deal when it was a not-for-profit or, you know, more of a community organisation like Ruapehu Alpine Lifts was.
Mm.
But then suddenly you've kind of got private equity coming in and buying your name. And I can imagine that's maybe quite daunting.
Tufaretoa, at one point, weren't they looking at buying Whakapapa Ski Field?
They did announce that. The Ariki announced that, but it got walked back pretty quickly. I think they engaged some people to have a look at it, some consultants and said, this doesn't really make sense.
Why don't they? I mean, there are some very wealthy iwi.
I think running a ski field is really hard. And unless it's a passion project, it's probably, you know, these are savvy business operators. It's probably better to put your money somewhere else. You'll probably get greater social outcomes somewhere else, better returns as well.
In terms of iwi, and though I wouldn't like to speak out of turn, Te Whanitua is a major iwi around that mountain. And their various hapu have different interests in wider society. But they all look at Ruapehu as an ancestor, as a living person. It's often referred to as koro, as grandfather. And I think that's a really important thing to take on from people, is that locally we think that this is a living person. It needs to be treated with respect, and that respect needs to filter down to the living people on the land.
I'm at the base of the mountain now, looking at the Chateau Tongariro, and it sadly is looking pretty shabby. The paint is cracking and peeling. It just looks like it's in dire need of a serious upgrade. But as we know from the headlines, just in the last, week or so, there are headlines like, Chateau Tongariro, are there plans for this grand old dame or not? Grand Chateau Tongariro bidders need more certainty from the government. That's according to the mayor of this area, Western Curtin. Haunting photos emerge of derelict Chateau Tongariro. And Prime Minister Christopher Luxon reveals more pressing priorities than Chateau Tongariro. And there's also a recent story of a painting in there, potentially worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, sitting inside in the lounge there. And it's reportedly drooping, cracking, deteriorating, kind of a symbol of really what's happening to this building.
The shadow was handed over back to Doc on March the 9th of 2023. So that was 6 months after rumblings on ski fields occurred. And then, of course, the double blow of the chateau being closed just before winter was not ideal either.
Yeah, so it was owned by the government until the 90s. It was actually built by Fletcher Construction back in the 20s, which is nuts when you think about it. But yeah, it was owned by the government until the 90s when it was sold to a Malaysian corporation that just owns all sorts of things. They own car distribution, they own palm oil plantations, they own property, they own hospitals and hotels, evidently. Well, they bought the hotel and leased the land underneath it. That lease is now expired. They haven't renewed it with Doc. And I think negotiations there are all ongoing. I mean, if I knew what was happening, I'd have a great story on my hands, but I don't. But they've put a lot of money into it over the years. I mean, they did it up in the 90s. They extended it in the 2000s. And then, yeah, seismic issues popped up. Tourism got really hard through the pandemic and they were selling room nights for dirt cheap.
Yeah.
It's just not a good place to be. So right now, Doc has control after that lease expired. If you don't own the land, you can't operate the hotel. And I guess you can't operate the hotel anyway because it's falling to pieces.
So, Andrew, what are the options for the chateau?
The best option is finding a buyer who's willing to take a chance and sort of restore it to its former glory, as it were. Otherwise, I guess the government does it up and then tries to attract someone in, but I don't see that being a popular option. And then the third option is damn the heritage and bowl it over, but, you know, they're saying they won't do that.
When the chateau was closed, we were told there was an earthquake strengthening review report that was coming out. And once that became public through an OIA process as well, we really did start to understand how the chateau was in such dire need of an upgrade. I mean, this is not a $3 or $4 million job to upgrade the chateau to current building standards, and earthquake strengthening will cost more than $30 million, I'm told. So there's a lot of money there. And who's going to pick up that tab? Is it DOT? Is it the former leaseholders? Is it the new owners? Who knows? Do you want to buy a building that's got $30 million worth of problems? That's the question. And it's a big question.
Mm. What do people want? What do the local people want to happen?
Well, I think, overwhelming, local people want ski fields. and they want the opportunity to run that part of their winter season on Whakapapa and Tūroa. It's hugely important for a lot of those businesses who haven't sort of pivoted to the summertime activities, like the ski hire places and that sort of thing. And they've built those businesses around the ski fields, and it is their livelihoods. And obviously, they are desperate to know, for a start, who's going to be running each field, or if both fields will be run separately or together. But, you know, I think the underlying feeling is they really want those ski fields open and running for as long as they can.
That's it for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. Alexia Russell produced this podcast. Phil Binge engineered it. Thanks to Andrew Bevan and Matthew Martin. And we'll leave you with the voices of people who come from all over to enjoy this slice of Aotearoa.
This is our first time here. So we were eager to come over to Monrua Peu for a long time now. So just wanted to have a feel of it. So yeah, just trying to come over and look at the gondola rides and all. So yeah.
Where have you come from?
We are from Wellington.
Ah,
yeah.
And what do you think of it?
It's just beautiful. It's amazing. It's
So you've been coming here for how long?
Since I was 12 years old and I'm now 60.
How do you feel about the uncertainty of things? You know, the uncertain future of the ski fields, but also the fact that the chateau, we don't know what's going to happen to that.
Well, it's an end of an era if it does happen, and that's always, there's a sadness around that. I kind of understand the doubt because, you know, the snowfall line seems to be going up. And the complication of the, you know, the iwi and the dock, and we've done some hiking here in the last couple of days, and it is pristine, it is stunning, and you do see that a ski field is quite invasive on a mountain. But at the same time, I'm a skier, so I love that option of being able to also ski here. So it's complex.
It's a shame that, particularly with the chateau down here, it's a real shame that that's not operating, because that's a landmark place. Yeah, and certainly with the, I don't know whether it's global warming or not, with the seasons being a bit tricky for the ski people, it's pretty tough. And whether the government should be pouring money into it or not, I don't really know.
Even if we don't know what's going to happen to the ski field, do you think it's got a future?
Definitely, it's got a future. Has to have. It's an icon. It's a big mountain in the middle of the island. It's a real attraction. Yeah, definitely got a future.